our show is going to be about 20 works by Asher, and we're really interested in projects that had like a form of like a distributed object or addressed institutional voice or household, public and private space. And the FAR project has so many of these references because it has the, you know, there's the takeaway envelope. It's actually speaking in the voice of FAR. So it's like it's a really interesting work. And I know you told me a little bit about it, but we thought as part of our project, you know, we're also looking at Asher works that are just not so well known. Like everyone knows these famous pieces from the 70s and things like his work at Cirrus, there's very little writing about, and it's later work, it's not anthologized. So to kind of, talk to people like you that presented his work, even informally, to talk informally is a lot of like value added to just the knowledge around these practices, you know? But maybe you could say a little about the start of Cirrus, just like when the gallery started and kind of, just like a short sort of like origin story about Cirrus.
Okay, well, I started in 1970. So it was 1968-69, I was at Tamarind Lithography Workshop. I had a Ford Foundation grant to do that. That brought me to LA because I always wanted to come to LA. And that's where I met a lot of the Los Angeles artists, because at that point she was inviting the LA people. And then I couldn't find a job and so like afterwards, and so I just decided to kind of open up Cirrus. So June Wayne sort of helped with that, because we had business classes at Tamarind, and so she kept me on longer to raise funds, basically. So I developed a proposal and went out and tried to raise funds in 1970. Ed Boucher actually found the building for me, which was very close to his studio on Western Avenue. So the original location was Melrose and Manhattan Place, which coincidentally is the new hotspot in LA. The David Zwirner's new LA gallery is a block away. They're calling it Melrose Hill now. So, but when I opened there, there was no other galleries really. So I was the only gallery. And, you know, my focus was on Los Angeles artists. I pretty much continued that most of my career, with interspersing a few times in the 80s. I started working with people outside of Los Angeles. So, you know, that's how it started. It started out as a workshop, and then a year later I opened up the gallery, because I had sort of a large space, 6,000 square feet, 3,000 of it wasn't being used. And so a couple of the local artists said, hey, if you like, you know, we'll help you build out a gallery if you are interested in showing us. So that's how the gallery started. You know, basically, I also represented people at that time already. Like I had Karen Carson and Gloria Kish, I had women. I had, interesting enough, we had given Morello Guerrero his first show in 1975. And we're actually doing prints with him now, a set of three prints. And he now shows with Kordansky, but he hasn't really shown much in between. I think it was in 1974, kind of related to this, Connie Llewellyn. We hired Connie Llewellyn to work with me and Jim Corcoran to run the gallery. So that's probably where like Michael Asher came in a way, because she also was sort of involved with FAR, with who else was involved? There was, what's her name, with a gallery in La Cienega showed Michael. Thomas Morgan, Connie Llewellyn, and with Claire Copley. So that's where I first saw Michael Asher's show. And he had basically just removed the wall between the office and the exhibition space. That was the show. So anyways, I don't know how much you want to go continue on this, but that's when I first opened, 1970.
I'm wondering how the concept for this exhibition came about. Like, I know it coincided with the first art fair in Los Angeles, but maybe you could just talk about how you came up with this idea that's pretty eccentric for a commercial gallery.
Yes, it coincided with the 1986 art fair, International Contemporary Art Fair Los Angeles. It was organized by a British firm. And it was pretty much, attended by dealers internationally as the first show in LA. And it also kind of dovetailed with the very first opening of MoCA on Grand Avenue. So I think it was, you know, one of those weekends of the fair. So I kind of, because I've been a huge supporter of LA. LA has been my thing basically. And trying to get LA to be more international, trying to get more galleries to happen here, more contemporary galleries throughout my career, and to you know participate more on the international art stage, which quite frankly LA never did. And so I thought, well, the people that would be coming to this fair really probably don't know much about the history of Los Angeles art. And so that was the beginning of the concept, that I would show them, you know, as many artists as I could that I thought were interesting during my time. And so the way to do it would be to create a collector that had collected the work personally. And the story was, and Melinda Wirtz, I don't know if you know Melinda Wirtz. When I first started, I was married to Turbell, I forget his first name. And he was like a director of the Pasadena, or the new Pasadena Art Museum, which was a contemporary museum. She divorced him and married Ed Wirtz. Ed Wirtz was sort of a scientist and teaching sort of at UCLA and involved with like Irwin and a lot of the light and space people. And so she was involved, and she was a curator. She was curator at UCI Irvine Gallery for a while. And so she was the one that worked with me to put it all together and wrote the little catalog. And I think we had like, you know, here's the catalog. I don't know if you have it, or I'm sure you have it, right? This is the catalog. Can you see?
We have the nice digital copy that you put online.
Okay, so there were like, I think, 190 some artists in the show, or maybe less, because some people had more than one piece, but quite a few. I created these collectors, so the story was that a husband was a business person in New York, got repositioned to Los Angeles, and they were very despondent about coming to like the West Coast, where there wasn't any intellectual life, so to say. But then once they got here, they sort of fell in love with things and met some artists and began to collab. And I called them the McCoys because they were the real McCoys. They were really collectors. So that was the premise for the show. And I got work that was not all new work. So I tried to get work from, you know, over the period of time. Earlier pieces like an early Bankston Masonite piece, which was a fabulous piece, and things like that. And then I decided just to turn the gallery into a house so you would see it in an actual house environment. And Michael, I asked him to show, which, and I was surprised because he said yes. Because I'd asked him on previous occasions to do a project with me, and he really didn't want to do anything that was per se art for sale, for instance, or in the marketplace or whatever. So nothing ever happened. But he wanted to do this because he liked the idea.
This is a specific question, but I noticed in the catalog that his work is for sale, and it's for sale for $30,000. But me and Jay were wondering, like, how did you come up with that number? It just seems very high.
I'm sure Michael came up with that, yeah. So in other words, no one would buy it.
Yeah, or we wondered, like, what did he price it in relation to supporting FAR, or was it just priced as an artwork?
I think it was priced as an artwork, but you know, you could donate to FAR. So it wasn't that the price would sell and the money would go to FAR. There was that brochure, which was, you know, in a plastic container that people could take and fill out and send a donation into FAR.
When you invited him to be in the show, do you remember much about the back and forth that led to this idea, or kind of how he proposed the idea to you that this be the work?
I don't really remember that. I just remember this is what I want to do, and that was it.
Yeah. And then one technical question. I mean, we see, you know, we've looked at his private notes, and we see a lot of time spent working on the slogan. You know, the slogan he went with is "Influence your culture, donate to FAR." But which is looks like it's painted on the wall, but he had worked through a lot of other kind of ad copy phrases around support and, you know, nonprofit culture and these different things. So that's the one he went with. And then right, it's then the display is like a angled shelf with their mission and their board list and their P&L and finances. So it's like a forensic display of the organization's attributes. And then, as you say, then in a plastic takeaway wall container is like a self-addressed envelope to FAR with a basically like a solicitation to make a donation. And do you remember, we wondered if Norm Latch painted the sign on the wall, or if you have much memory of how the installation happened.
That I don't know. Yeah, I don't remember if Norm did it. I mean, I don't have any photographs, so I couldn't really see how that looks. I mean, it might have just been something like press type or something that we did. I don't know. We didn't have anybody design it, so it would have been Michael.
Yeah, that makes sense, because he's so obsessed with typography and these details. I didn't ask you this last time, but like, how did that work feel to you, or how did it, when he proposed it and it came in, did it work with the concept of the show?
I don't think I really had any opinion one way or the other. I mean, but basically I knew the people at FAR, so that was cool.
I was just going to ask if you had any relationship to FAR prior to this project.
Well, just that Morgan Thomas, I knew Morgan Thomas and Thomas and Connie Llewellyn was involved in that, wasn't she? And she worked for me, right? But she was no longer working for me at this point because she left me in 77, or I forget exactly, but she went to work for Larry Gagosian for his gallery. It wasn't called Gagosian Gallery at that time, it was called Prince on Broxton Street. And so we lent him some of the editions for one of his shows, and he was buying prints to sell from Cirrus. And Morgan Thomas was an art consultant, so she would, you know, before they had the gallery together, she was an art consultant, and she would come in and try to sell things to her clients from Cirrus's inventory or new publications or whatever. Yeah, and gallery.
And in this show, in the Southern California collection, was it primarily all primary market work that you got from artists? Like, because I know you said you were getting new work in some cases, but
pretty much it was from the artists. Yeah, or it might have been from their gallery.
Yeah, it really is such an interesting concept.
Look, it was a great show. Yeah.
How did you source the furniture?
Oh, that I just sourced it from, I don't remember the name of the company, but it's a big company that you can rent furniture from. So, you know, regular for apartments and stuff like that. So that's how I did that. Except for the Peter Shire chair that I got from him directly, I think. And of course, the Frank Gehry furniture was furniture I got from my office from Frank directly years before in the 70s. Trying to think of what else. There was some stuff there that there were some tables that were by Jim Ganser. I don't know if you know his work. Jim Ganser was sort of like hanging around with the Venice Boys, like Peter Alexander and Chuck Arnoldi and that group. And he was, of course, like a lot of the surfers. And so he made that a table out of a surfboard. And he also made like a sort of entry table out of palm fronds. I think that's all I can remember right now. So that was their work. That was considered their art.
Oh, thanks for mentioning Jim Ganser. Yeah, because we saw that, the surfboard, and we were wondering, because it sort of feels like a hybrid between a sculpture and a piece of furniture. And then, Jean, you mentioned this to me before, but maybe you could say something, because I know this work, you know, it doesn't appear in your installation photography, and it didn't live through the life of the show. Maybe you could say a little bit about what happened to the installation.
Well, we had, the opening was enormous, enormous amount of people. I mean, it was just nonstop for the entire time, people. And so gallery is incredibly packed off the both floors and in the back patio, the whole bit. And so the piece was hung near the elevator, entrance to the elevator. And I know I was standing there, and then we were talking and Michael was there. I don't know what we were discussing, but there was a woman who had a glass of red wine in her hand, and somehow she backed into the sculpture and, you know, broke it and fell on the floor. And, you know, I was aghast as this whole thing happened right in front of Michael. But he was so cool about it and said, no problem, whatever. So that's what happened to it. And that's why we don't have a photograph of the installation.
And then did the piece actually get removed right after that happened?
I just don't remember. It probably was not rehung, because then it might have been in an installation photo.
Right. So it didn't live through the life of the show, basically, at all.
Right. Didn't live through the life of the show. I mean, I'm not sure it might have. I just don't have, I don't recall that. If it did, it would have probably, just the plastic box and not the brochures, because I think they were all stained. And I just don't remember, quite frankly.
No, this is already so helpful because I think, like, for the Asher Foundation and people that have studied this, they don't really, you know, because he only has photos and notations about his piece. He doesn't have a lot of context about the show. And it actually feels like the show, you know, that the work is kind of site-specific. And for him to do a, you know, your concept is so interesting because it's like your concept conjures a whole set of relations. Like it conjures, you know, you're creating, you're telling the history of LA art, you're inventing a collector, you're inventing a domestic situation. So it's kind of like conjuring an image of a patron who is supporting the ecosystem and articulating the history and playing a kind of art historical role. And then it's really interesting that the work he makes, I mean, he's, as an artist, is part of that history, but he chooses to make a work that's like a portal to another organization that's nonprofit that also supports hundreds of artists who don't make objects, who make performances and films and events and discursive works. And, you know, so it's like it's opening this window to like another side of the art world, which isn't the side supported by an art patron.
Yeah, it's another alternative support system, right?
Yeah, and that's embedded within your show as a historical collection of the place, you know. So anyway, we find it really fascinating how he uses himself to almost be like a vessel in this work, you know. Yeah, which makes it feel really site specific that like, oh, that's an interesting way to almost flip the show on its head by showing a whole nother thing through the potentiality of like another organization like FAR. It's interesting, you know. It feels really specific to why he would want to do it at Cirrus in this show.
I know he was very excited about the actual show, you know, which I was kind of surprised that like he would be, you know, I'm sure a lot of those artists he didn't relate to or whatever, but I think he was just excited about the concept of the history of Los Angeles artists. And wanted to support that too. Right, I mean, otherwise he wouldn't have participated.
Yeah, no, that makes so much sense. And it feels like a fruitful context to make a work in. Like, it gives him a lot to respond to.
Were there other artists who made site-specific works for the show?
No, I think I mean, today you could do it all, you know, take it all further with digital and everything. You could do interview the fake collectors, you could have talks about the show, podcasts, you know, you could do all kinds of things, which at that time you couldn't.
I mean, this is such an ingenious concept, also linked to the art fair, also linked to like your deep interest in seeing LA broadcast on a more international stage. Did it play out the way you wanted? Like, did you get the audience you wanted? Did it feel like it kind of did achieve the desired effect?
I think we had quite a lot of traffic during the course of the show. I don't remember particularly. There was so much going on that when the fair was open and MoCA opening at the same time, sort of. So the, you know, with I don't know if a lot of, how many people came from the fair that were from out of town to see the show. And so I just don't know that. But yeah, it was pretty well talked about and attended, yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then did you make the catalog after the fact?
I think we made the catalog. Yeah, we made the catalog after. We made a little catalog during the show because we didn't have the digital thing stuff then, right? So this was like the black and white catalog. So the text, probably a list of the works.
No, we've never seen that one.
Is Asher listed in the checklist for that small catalog, even though his work was taken away?
The same checklist, yeah.
In the copy that you have online, it actually has some red dots and things like stuff sold out of the show, of course.
I like the piece of press that's included in the back of the catalog that is online. Is this someone who you knew, Suzanne Loomis, and talked to? It seems like they're like kind of in on the joke.
And that was for this local downtown sort of newspaper that was free. Downtown News. So yeah, I have to take a look and see if there was anything in the Times.
It'd be cool if we could find any other reviews.
Might not have been, because otherwise I would have put them in this catalog, the digital catalog, but I'll see if I can find some information from somebody. But it was kind of like, you know, it's like, so that time, 86, like, you know, Cirrus had been around for a while. And quite frankly, a lot of the kind of people refer to Cirrus in Los Angeles as a print publisher. They never mention it as a gallery. We had a collector come to the show of Rouchet on Saturday. I hadn't seen him for a long time. He's been around forever. I mean, he's been around since I opened, 1970, and he's like print collector, sort of. And he said, "Oh, I never knew you had a gallery." I was like shocked. But yeah, it's amazing. A lot of people, my sort of peers or competitors, always reference me as a print shop. So, and I guess it took me out of the unique business. So people might not come here for a unique work.
I wouldn't think of you that way at all.
Right, I know, but that's kind of what happens here in LA with Cirrus.
So then in 86, was the McCoys the best collectors in the city? Was there any real collector that could rival that?
In terms of collecting California artists, I don't know the extent of his collection, but Robert Rowan was a big collector here in LA at the time, and I know he did collect some California art, sort of supported the Nick, you know, bought from Nick Wilder. Trying to think, I mean, Melinda Wirtz, when she was Melinda Turbell, she collected a lot of California work. You know, she had some Light and Space people and Irwin Disc, I remember, early painting of Irwin. And she probably had Moses, and probably she had most of that group, like the Rouchet and Kaufman Bell group, Price. Betty Asher was a very big collector of, but she did collect the pop artists early on, like Warhol, paintings from $100, and she continued to collect. I mean, I know she had like big Robert Gober piece. I bought a McCracken plank from her. She was very supportive of me in the very beginning before I opened. She was working for LACMA as Maurice Tuckman's sort of secretary. And Cliff Westerman, who I'd met at Tamarind, and he was a friend, said, "Go see Betty Asher," when I was trying to raise money, and Betty gave me a list of people to call in LA. So she didn't really sell her works back to, when she sold them, she didn't sell them to just anybody. So I was very honored that she sold me that great McCracken plank that I had. And she sold me, well, I was missing the Red Gas Station because I hadn't print that, because that was printed by Audrey Sabol from the East Coast. That was in 66. I printed the other gas stations in 69. Yeah, she was very supportive of Cirrus, Michael's mother. And she had a huge collection of cups. She was into ceramic cups. And I think she donated that to LACMA. But she was a very positive spokeswoman for LA artists.
Yeah. The one private collection he was in was the Grinsteins.
Well, the Grinsteins were supportive.
He did a commission for their home, but were they supportive of California art or more pop conceptual art?
Well, I remember being in their home, and it was pretty much pop conceptual art, yeah. Warhol and Lichtenstein and Rauschenberg and, yeah. Gemini didn't really work with California artists very much in the beginning. So they weren't interested in Naumann, for instance, until after I co-published with Leo Castelli. And then they, you know, took Naumann, and then like Leah Selman's, they were never interested in her. They weren't interested in the LA artists, basically. Didn't do Leah Selman's until probably, I don't remember what time when she was, I got her to introduce her work to a New York dealer who was friends at that time in the 70s. Connie Llewellyn was friends with his wife, David McKee. So David McKee was not even interested in Via Selman's until he found out I sold Harry Anderson this first Via Selman's, a drawing, which came from the Don Maron collection because I sold those pieces to Don Maron first. And then he took Via to Gemini. You know, they just really weren't that interested.
Oh, that's all really interesting. Well, Jean, this is so helpful. I mean, you know, this all Asher's projects are kind of like happen in really, really particular context, and to know more about this is like so fundamental to understanding the work. So thank you so much for taking the time to tell us a little bit about this, you know.
Okay, well, hope I helped a little.
Definitely.
You certainly did. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, a lot.
And I, you know, look forward to seeing the show, hopefully.
Cool. Well, we'll see you. Yeah, maybe we'll see you in the fall.
Yeah, hopefully I'll get there.
We'll keep you posted.